the University of Bonn. Although it's probably not necessary, I would like to say some words about Theodor. He obtained his PhD under the supervision of Heinz Bauer, who is known for his textbooks at the University of Erlangen-Nürnberg, and he did also his habilitation in 93 in Nürnberg, Erlangen-Nürnberg. And then after positions in Zurich, Erlangen-Nürnberg, Bonn, and the Max Planck Institute in Leipzig, he became a full professor in Bonn in 1997. There he was from 2012 to 2019, the spokesman of the Hausdorff Center. And he will be from 2024 on the director of the Hausdorff Research Institute for Mathematics. In 2016, Theodor Sturm received the RSC Advanced Research Grant about metric measure spaces and Ricci curvature analytic geometric probabilistic challenges. And he was elected as a member of the Academia Europaea in 2022. The research field of Theodor Sturm is wide. It ranges from probability theory to stochastic processes, differential geometry, analysis of manifolds, potential theory, partial differential equations. In particular, he did important contributions to optimal transport problems and curvature bounds and gradient flows. And today he will speak about conformally invariant random geometry on manifolds of even dimension. And I would like to hand over to Theodor Sturm.
Yeah, thank you very much for the invitation to this prestigious seminar and also for the kind introduction. As Stefan mentioned, my main focus of research is in recent years more on synthetic Ricci bounds, functional inequalities, metric measure spaces, things like that. Today I will speak on another topic which we where we started a few years ago to think whether there is a chance to extend some of the famous results from two-dimensional stochastic conformally invariant geometry or probability to higher dimensions. So most of what I say today is based on a joint work or can be found in a joint paper with Lorenzo de la Scavia, Ronan Cary, and Eva Kopfer. So let me start a little bit more broad and heuristic, and I was told I should address my presentation to non-experts. So this will start with a kind of heuristic interpretation to probabilistic approaches to field theory. What one aims for is quite often an average over the set of all manifolds, let's say, of genus n or of dimension n, perhaps also with a different genus, but kind of make an average over manifolds. And averaging means in mathematical terms, find a probability measure on this space. At least in higher dimensions, this is too complicated. A more promising goal is if we fix a reference space and we consider the class of manifolds which are conformally equivalent to the given one, so which can be written with a weighted tensor, where the weight, let's say, is a continuous function or smooth function, or actually later on we will also consider distributions. So now we fix this space and we want to find a probability measure on this class. So in other words, on this function's age. This means given this reference manifold, we want to find a probability measure on these functions, which we call fields. Actually, these functions at the end of the day will mostly be not functions, but only distributions. And we want that this choice of this measure again is conformally invariant. Namely, if our initial metric is a weighted metric with respect to the given one, then the measure should be the same. Yeah? So we choose weights, and if we already start with a weighted tensor, it should produce the same result. And if you have two manifolds and if there's an isometry between them, this isometry should transport our fields in such a way that the distribution from here is transported to the distribution there. So this is what we require as a minimal set of conditions on such a choice of probability measures on fields. Otherwise, there is an absolute tremendous amount of ambiguity. Okay, now, given that, of course, there is still too much room for solutions, but then we concentrate on Gaussian fields. This is, in some sense, the most canonical way. So we try to find a measure which heuristically or informally can be written as a uniform distribution on functions weighted with certain energy of these functions. Well, so we have in mind that this h, let's say, continuous functions. This dh means there is a uniform distribution. And then we have energy, like Dirichlet energy, or something like that. And then there's a normalizing constant, which makes these things finite. The problem is, in practice, there is not such a measure. And for any reasonable approximations, the normalizing constant will be infinite. Of course, this goes hand in hand. To give a rigorous meaning to this, we have the Bochner-Mindel's theorem, which says, okay, instead of writing down such a heuristic formula, we go to a more rigorous formula. we define the field of this measure by its characteristic function, which is then given in terms of the dual energy. If the energy is given by an operator A, the inverse operator gives this curly K. And if you think of classical objects, if this is the Dirichlet energy, this is the integral with respect to the green curve. So this is the robust quantity, and this, okay, still there is something to do, but Bochner-Mindel's would be a rigorous definition of what we want. We want a measure such that the characteristic functions are given by this dual energy. And if we have this characterization, then a little bit non-rigorous, but almost rigorous consequence will be that these fields will be centered, which is anyway what we are aiming for, and the covariance is given by this kernel. So the kernel would be the kernel for the inverse operator of this kind. I will be more precise in the procedure. But this is a kind of general strategy. Yeah? We want to describe our measure as a Gaussian measure, and this energy plays an important role in its in the heuristic description of what we are doing. And since we want that these measures are conformally invariant, these measures, the G stands for a metric tensor, and okay, I have mentioned before that in the sequel I will fix this M, and I take this isometric property in some sense for granted. In all my constructions, this is satisfied, but this is not really the point which we have to stress. This property rules out many other candidates. So we focus on this property, we fix for M, and we require that our measure is invariant under this transformation. And now if you look on this formula, if the probability measure should be invariant under this transformation, it means the energy has to be invariant. And so we end up with this requirement that the energy of a function in the metric tensor G should be the same as in any weighted tensor. And yeah, surprisingly enough, there is a solution for that in dimension two. This is the Dirichlet energy. So if we make this weight, this means the volume changes with n times phi, which is indeed again 2 times phi. The gradient changes with e to the minus phi, which cancels out, so you have no change if you change the metric tensor. So the Dirichlet energy is conformally invariant in dimension two. This is really a crucial property. And therefore, let me briefly go a little bit to dimension two, or to restrict myself to dimension two. Based on this definition made rigorous with energy, the fields which are constructed are called Gaussian free fields. So this is done by many people, but very strongly pushed and popularized by the work of Scott Sheffield and Jason Miller. It turns out that these are not really functions. These are distributions. I will come to this later. But for this naive introduction, let us pretend that these are functions. if these are functions, we want to also consider measures, and heuristically, if these measures are obtained from the Riemannian volume measure by weighting them with these fields. So we want to use these fields as conformal weights. Actually, there should be an N here in some sense, but we make it a little bit more flexible and put up gamma. And you will see why there is an advantage to put here a normalization factor. This object can be defined rigorously. It's not well defined as it is written here. This is the celebrated Liouville quantum gravity. It's a random measure on a given manifold. So for instance, on the round sphere or on the torus. And both objects are very closely related to many other objects in probabilistic objects in dimension two. There are two famous objects in dimension two, which are conformally invariant. This is the Brown motion and the Schramm-Löwner evolution. And what is also very interesting is that this is deeply linked to the so-called Brownian map. Again, I will come to this a little bit later, so allow me just to skip details here and to go on. And let me now spend a few minutes on how to make this definition rigorous. And we fix now to dimension one, which is out of my scope usually because I only concentrate on even dimensions, but let's, for the introduction, move on to a one-dimension case. And let us put here priority energy. And this is a very beautiful definition for the Wiener measure. So, and as far as I know, it was also used by Feynman. And you can make this rigorous by replacing continuous curves by piecewise linear curves. And piecewise linear curves obtained by drawing points hj at time instances tj. So you have a partition of a time interval c1, as usual, by t1, t2, and so on. And then you have to decide what should be the value of your function. And you just throw these values randomly. Randomly actually distributed with Lebesgue measure. So you have a n-dimensional Lebesgue measure with which you throw these points, and you wait for whole thing. So this replaces with dh. This dh is an n-dimensional Lebesgue measure for these variables. And you replace the energy by the discrete energy. The discrete Dirichlet energy of this point or of a linear interpolation through these points. And then if you let n go to infinity and phi-ness go to zero, this converges to Wiener measure. Actually, if you write down this formula explicitly, you see that these are exactly the Gaussian kernels which you obtain if you write down your Chatrin-Kolmogorov equation to define the finite dimensional distribution of a Wiener measure at this time instances. So this is one way. Yeah, you go to a discretization of this, a finite dimensional approximation. Another way is you replace this guy here in some sense by spectral calculus, by a bounded operator, by replacing the Laplacian, which has infinitely many eigenvalues, by bounded operators where you truncate just the high eigenvalues of a Laplacian. More explicitly, this H here can be expressed as an infinite sum of the eigenvalues of a Laplacian of this interval times the eigenfunctions times IID Gaussian random variables. So you have Gaussian random variable psi I, you multiply it by eigenfunctions of a Laplacian, you divide it by the square. Since we are on the interval, this can be made explicit. For eigenfunctions are the sine functions. For eigenvalues are just this guy squared. And if you take the inverse square root, it's just this. And again, this was already observed by Wiener, that this is one way to define Brownian motion. And what I have said before, to make this more rigorous, you start with a finite sum, then this is a nice object, and you prove convergence to something. So this is another way to give a rigorous meaning to this object. You can see that this is indeed a solution of these random fields, which are required or which can be constructed with Bochner-Mindlos. And yeah, this gives you a probability measure. which is a little bit less regular than C1/2. And you also know from other fields, or probably from SPDs, that the higher the dimension, the less regular are your random fields, or your probability measures, your distributions. So here in dimension one, it's C1/2. The borderline here, the borderline is C0 in dimension two, and if you go higher, it goes much more to the negative orders. So in dimension two, it turns out that a similar construction gives you random fields. You can write down fields exactly in the same way. If you replace m by a square, you take the Laplacian, the eigenvalues of a square with Dirichlet boundary conditions, let's say, and you take the same construction and you obtain a series which converges in each negative Sobolev space, but not in two. And this is the Gaussian free field. Okay, now this was in some sense the crash course in Gaussian free field, but in general dimension, this Dirichlet energy is not really the right object. Yeah, we have seen that this is conformally invariant in dimension two, but it will not be conformally invariant in any other dimension. And the reason is, as I already mentioned, if you replace the metric tensor by G, the metric tensor G by a weighted tensor, this means that you scale the volume with e to the n phi, and you scale length by e to the phi, so gradients by e to the minus phi. So you have this extra weight here. So this is no longer the same energy as for the unperturbed one. And okay, if you play around a little bit, what could you do? You see in dimension four, for instance, you have this four minus two. Okay, the four comes from the volume, the two comes from the squared operator. This is too less. So you have to find an operator of higher order to compensate this n from the dimension. So in dimension four, you should work instead with a gradient with a Laplacian. So a good candidate in some sense is the energy which comes from the bi-Laplacian. You integrate the Laplacian of u squared to get the energy, and the associated generator is a bi-Laplacian. This is still not conformally invariant because the Laplacian itself is not conformally invariant. If you transform the Laplacian in higher dimension, you get a weighted Laplacian. But okay, still you see this conformal transformation is the same up to lower order terms. Okay, and if you arrived at this observation, it is just a challenge of reverse engineering to get rid of these lower order terms. Yeah? You try to put the lower order terms into this energy in order to obtain something which is conformally invariant. And this was successfully done by Panitz. He taught us what we have to choose in dimension four. In dimension four, it's not the Laplacian squared, it's the Laplacian squared plus low order operators, which are of second order. Here we have a fourth order operator. Okay, if you think of a generator, it's the generator is fourth order here, and here it would be second order generator. And okay, this normalization constant is just for later purpose, of course, with every other constant in front, it's conformally invariant. So this is an important observation of Panet. If you are on the torus, or these curvature terms all disappear. If you're on the round sphere, this is just a constant. On the sphere, it's Laplacian squared plus a constant times gradient squared. This is now conformally invariant, and more generally, if we are on an n-dimensional space with even n, it is the work of Graham, Cheen, Mason, and Sparling, based on the work of many other people, who proved that it is this energy where the low order terms, we know that they exist and are unique, but it's hard to write them down. You can write down them in dimension four, also in dimension six, and maybe if you want to work very hard, you finally will find the formula in dimension eight. I don't really know whether this is printed somewhere, but probably somebody already did it in dimension eight. So what does this mean? If a generator then is the generator, you would put this differential operator to the left-hand side. The generator then is the Laplacian to the n half. So it's a differential operator of order n. And the energy is just this quantity. And n even means that the generator, this Laplacian to the n half, is a differential operator. In odd dimensions, it will be a pseudo-differential operator, but nothing is known so far, or at least we did not find good references, and nobody really knows exactly what to do. But in even dimension, we have this energy, and this is the only conformally invariant energy up to this constant, which leads to a generator which is a differential operator. Now, this requires n to be even and to have exactly this Laplacian to the n half plus lower order term. So the generator of this energy is a generator written in this form. Just put everything onto the operator. This is Laplacian. Oh, we should drop this u. Sorry. It's negative Laplacian to the n half applied to u. No u here. For the constant, of course, a priori is arbitrary. For later use, we choose a particular constant, which we call an. This is just because we have to normalize it. And then there is some convention which I have to introduce, otherwise formulas will be hard to understand. Since we are on a compact manifold and we want to invert the Laplacian, we have to rule out the constants. So a function is called grounded if a mean value is zero, or a distribution if it's paired with a one is zero. And the grounded Sobolev spaces are these spaces where the constants are factored out. And when the Laplacian is maps from Sobolev space to grounded Sobolev space, and the green operator, the grounded green operator, this is just the inverse. Yeah? The grounded green operator can act on functions which have mean value zero. This is just have to get rid of this constant. And also some comment which is not so crucial, but nevertheless it's important to observe that this energy which we have defined, I jump back a little bit, this energy is not necessarily non-negative, because we have these low order terms. And even if you want to look on a more explicit term, you see here, this is of course a positive term, no problem. But here you have terms, color curvature could be negative, Ricci curvature. So these guys could have both signs. It's not really clear whether the energy is non-negative. And indeed, it's not always negative, not always positive. We restrict to the case that the energy is positive on grounded functions. So it's zero on constants, and if the functions are not constant, they have positive energy. This includes large classes of manifolds. So in dimension four, which is the challenging case for us now, all compact Einstein manifolds, so these are manifolds with constant Ricci curvature, where the Ricci curvature is just a multiple of a scalar. They are admissible. Compact hyperbolic form manifolds or form manifolds with negative constant curvature and with sufficiently large spectral gap are admissible. And you see already with this condition, this is then the building block for counter exams. If you have a small spectral gap, one can construct counter. But don't worry too much. We have a huge class of admissible manifolds, and dimension two F manifold is admissible. And now we have defined this P, which is essentially for a negative Laplacian to the power n half. We invert it. This is our co-polyharmonic green operator. It defines a bilinear form, which is this form where we integrate the green kernel. And this inverse operator, this is now crucial. Actually, there are two important properties, namely this green kernel, this kernel for this operator, has a singularity which is logarithmic. And this has to do with the fact that we started in dimension n with an operator of order n. Now, if we would start with an operator of less, then we would have a singularity of algebraic order. If we start with different order, we would have a bounded kernel. And order n is exactly borderline as Laplacian in dimension two, and we get we obtained that the kernel, the green kernel, this generalized green kernel, has a logarithmic singularity. So for k is essentially a negative logarithm of a distance. And there is no constant in front, and no constant in front comes from the fact that we have chosen for the constant in front of our energy. So this property is really what we need. We need that the kernel around the singularity is negative logarithm of the distance. And we need that the kernel is conformally invariant. If we switch from G to G prime, then the kernel is the same up to some normalization, which comes from this regrounding, because by this grounding, we require that this kernel has mean value zero in the y variable and mean value zero in the x variable, but mean value changes. If you go from g to g prime, you have a different notion of mean values. So you have to modify this in order to have a grounded kernel. But of course, this only depends on x and this only on y. There is no joint dependence. So this is, in some sense, you can forget. This is irrelevant. The relevance is that you essentially have conform invariance up to regrounding, and you have logarithmic divergence. And these are the two crucial properties. And these two properties are only possible if you really start with this co-polyharmonic operator, with this Gram-Jean spiraling operator. And now we define the fields. We say the rigorous definition is a family of random fields parameterized by functions in whatever class. The maximal class is negative Sobolev space. You also can take positive Sobolev space, whatever. And you take the expectation of these pairs with this. This is in function space. This would be just x or t. If you have a stochastic process, this t would run through the real axis. Now u runs through a function space. And we define this Gaussian field by its covariance. And essentially, this means that the covariance of hx and hy is the green, is this generalized green. The problem with this definition is this h are not functions. So it's not really clear whether we are allowed to speak of h of x. This h are distributions. So this is meaningful, but this might be not meaningful. You can give an meaning to this, but this requires a little bit of sophisticated extension. But the heuristic interpretation, which you should have in mind, is this. This is also the heuristic definition of a Gaussian free field in dimension two. And there you have the logarithmic kernel on planes or whatever. And how to construct this? You do it exactly as I explained in with this Wiener construction for the ground in motion. You choose an IID sequence of random variables. So this is the omega dependence here. You have an x dependence, which is in the eigenfunctions, and these are just scalars. And these scalars are, of course, they are responsible for bad convergence rates of this, yeah? Because you divide it by the square roots of eigenvalues, and typically this is converging like a harmonic series. So it's not really very, very nicely. At the end of the day, when we are able to prove that this is an element in the Sobolev space of negative order for every epsilon, but it's not L2, it's not a function. And more explicit, you can do the following. So this is our definition, which we started with. Okay, maybe forget about that. And what do? We truncate this at level L. And then, of course, we have smooth functions in the x variable, because the eigenfunctions are the infinity. And so we have random C infinity functions, and we claim that they converge as L goes to infinity. And the convergence holds in whatever sense. What is also interesting, if you, these guys are martingales, you can see this more explicit if you pair it with scalar functions. Or with functions in order to have a real number. So whenever you choose one of these test functions, you have this pair. These are real numbers parameterized by L. And these are martingales. Do I have a proof of it? No. Okay, but this simply comes from the fact that you add more and more noise. And the convergence now is a true martingale convergence result. You have very nice convergence in L2 space. yeah, okay. Maybe I skip this and I go to the conformal invariance. It's not really surprising that this field now is conformally invariant. Again, we have one minor problem, namely our fields are also kind of functions which are grounded, which have mean value zero. Mean value zero is of course by construction for this H, but now this H prime lives in a space with a different measure. So in this different measure, this H is not grounded. It has no mean value zero. So we have to subtract the mean value. Right? Now we have a measure with respect to G prime, and this H does not have mean value zero. So we subtract the mean value in the measure corresponding to G prime to make this the new copolyhedron field. But this is a minor modification. You should not worry about that. The message is these fields are conformally invariant. And now we come to a more interesting, fascinating topic, namely the so-called Liouville geometry. So far, we have just constructed random fields, Gaussian random fields on manifolds or on Euclidean subsets, whatever. Okay, what is the meaning of Liouville geometry? The idea is you fix a Riemann manifold admissible in order that our construction works and a Gaussian field. Well, so it's a random field parameterized by some small omegas and it has values in distributions. And hopefully this distribution is almost a function. So we can pretend that the calculus for functions at least could make some sense. And then we want to study this randomly perturbed metric. Now, G is our original metric, H is our random field, and we want to randomly perturb our remaining tensor. This, to be honest, will not make sense. There is no meaningful interpretation for that because H is a distribution. We don't have any reasonable object for that. But we can think that more robust quantities are meaningful, namely the remaining volume associated to this tensor and the remaining distance. And the remaining volume, if you change the metric tensor this way, the volume would change that way. And the distance would change in this way. Yeah? You take, define the distance, the new distance between x and y by taking the infimum over all curves phi from 0, 1, starting in x, ending at y. And you weight this with respect to the h integrated along this curve. And this is just the speed of the curve. This will define the remaining distance. If this h is a smooth function, this is the distance associated with this metric. This is the measure, volume measure associated with this metric. But again, this is not meaningful if we do not add extra renormalization. This always will converge to infinite in some sense. Whenever you start calculate the volume of a non-trivial set, the volume will be infinite. And here it always will be zero. The distance between any pair of points will be zero because given 2 points, our random fluctuations are so strong that this curve finds a path where this h is almost negative infinite. And walking along this path, it costs nothing. And here it's clear if you have fluctuations, Gaussian fluctuations, it's e to the h. If h is symmetric, the positive parts, of course, end much more than the negative parts. So this volume will be infinite. To compensate that, okay, what do? We consider exponential martingales. Yeah? Not exponential of a martingale, but we should consider exponential martingales. Exponential martingales, just to point on this formula, would mean if we take e to the random field, we should subtract its one half of its variance. This has much better chance to converge to something. Okay, now let me explain what is here on this slide. Here on this slide, I summarize what people did in dimension two. And the first thing is you should not start with this Gaussian free field, because anyway, then all formula are meaningless. You start with a finite dimensional approximation. So for instance, taking this eigenfunction representation and going up to eigenfunction of order L. And secondly, you have to build in renormalization. How does this renormalization look like? I mentioned already in this definition of a measure, this is what you would like to have instead of dimension n. We put here a general parameter gamma, because it turns out that we also should choose for gamma not too large. It's important that the gamma is a kind of small number. But we do not only choose this, we subtract one half of its expectation of this, of the expectation of this guy. And in most approximations, actually this then is a constant independent of x. So people mostly choose an approximation of this noise where this is just a constant, depending on L. Then this explicit form is not easily seen. There's just a normalization constant in front. But this comes from the fact that here you take exponential martingales, and then you have a good chance for convergence. Yeah? This is then clear, because this is an exponential martingale in L, and you have strong convergence results for martingales. You could also interpret this in a different way. You could say, I take the volume of this guy in a of an arbitrary set, and I divide it by the expected volume of a reference set. And this is what people do now with distance. So the distance story, this is a very new story, even dimension two, you know, only first results obtained 3 years ago. the distance, this would be the naive definition with a random field approximated such that this is really a function. But again, you have to have a renormalization, and what, and this is this constant lambda here. What is this constant? This constant is just this distance between a point zero and one, on which have macroscopic distance one. And then you take the distance in this definition, take this expectation, so you have a real number, and this number depends on L and on gamma, and this is this number here. So you divide this by, its, roughly speaking, its expected value on a given reference distance. And then this group of people could prove that this limit exists, and this gives a distance which is equivalent to the Euclidean or Riemannian distance. So not the distance is equivalent, but the topology is equivalent. And there is another fascinating result due to Miller and Sheffield, namely for a very particular value, namely square root of 8/3. This object which you obtain here, this measure and the distance, which is a metric measure space, this is isometric or isomorphic, perhaps is the better word, to the Brownian map. What is the Brownian map? The Brownian map is the scaling limit of random triangulations of a sphere or quadrangulations. This is a work of Le Gall and Niemann. You think of a round sphere, and you make a triangulation with, let's say, k points. There is only a finite number of such possibilities for triangulations with k vertices. You give to each of these triangulations the same weight. Yeah? Your probability measure is just the equidistribution on all triangulations with k vertices, and then you have to scale the lengths and the weights. Okay, this you have to either calculate by yourself or look at the literature. There is a scaling of weights and distances such that the limit is non-trivial, and then you obtain a universal limit, which is called Brownian map, like scaling a random walk, and you always obtain Brownian motion. You can start with triangulations, you can start with quadrangulations, you can also start with partitions in octants and so on. You always obtain the same random object. So it's a random metric measure space, and actually this is the same as we constructed here. So this is for story in dimension two. Now we want to do the same game in the higher dimensions. And we had been surprised that nobody did it before. So let's take a compact manifold of even dimension. Let's choose H to be our Gaussian field associated with this copolyharmonic operator. We truncate this field by going in the Sears representation only up to order L. So we have a nice C infinity function in the X variable. We call its variance KL, or its covariance KL XY, but here we only need the variance. So we have a function minus its variance, one half its variance, and this is our C infinity density for the remaining volume. And based on the work of Kahan and Shamov, under the name of Gaussian multiplicative chaos, one easily can prove that this measure rho L times Riemannian volume converges to something. And this something is what is called Liouville quantum gravity measure, LQG measure. Provided this gamma is not too big. And I will give you now a very short proof, and I hope you enjoy this, because this is really a nice argument where you can see why this such a bound is useful, let's say. I do it in a more restrictive setting. Before we had only that this is a martingale, so it was an L1 martingale. Now in the setting where this is less than square root of n, before we had square root of 2n, if a gamma is less than square root of n, we can prove that it's an L2 bounded martingale. In fact, the argument is much easier. And it goes as follows. Now take this measure, integrate it against some bounded function, let's say bounded between 0 and 1, and consider this YL, this stochastic process. To prove that it's a bounded L2 bounded martingale, we calculate the expectation of its square. If you calculate the expectation of its square, recall that this gamma HL minus this variance was used to define the measure. We multiplied by U and the same in the Y variable. And here, so, but this is an ex. So this is a martingale. This is a martingale. The sum of both is a martingale. If you consider this whole object, this is not a complete square. Now, what is missing there is exactly this mixed term. This is the gamma square of KLXY. This is just a missing term to make this to a complete square and to have, make this to an exponential martingale. So this is missing. Exponential martingale has expectation one. You can drop it. So now all randomness is away. It's just analysis problem. The kernel in the exponential with a prefactor gamma square and this function's u. Let's assume u is less than one. Then it amounts just to the integrability of this gamma. And then it's important that this kernel has logarithmic divergence. So this kernel close to the diagonal is a logarithm of a distance, negative logarithm of a distance. So this to the gamma square is 1 over distance to the gamma square. And it's an easy exercise to see that this integral is finite if and only if gamma square is less than one, which is our condition. So this is really a beautiful elementary argument. The argument with a two here and a one here is much, much more involved. I would say it's 10 times more complicated or 50 times more complicated. Okay, what can we say on this measure? This measure is never absolutely continuous with respect to the volume measure, but it's not too bad. It has no Dirac's and it does not charge sets of vanishing capacity. For experts in Dirac forms, this tells us that we can make a time change with respect to this measure. And we can consider the Dirichlet form on this time changed L2 space. And this is what people in dimension two then call Liouville Brownian motion. It's just a random time change of a Brownian motion. So the random time change comes from the change of this reference measure, keeping the energy as it is. And the other important property is that we have a conformed invariance of this LQG measure, again up to a prefactor. It's a little bit like Gersonov. Gersonov also says that the distribution is invariant if you add, if you shift it by invariant up to this prefactor. But this prefactor is very innocent. So there's each of the n phi, which is clear. If you change the metric with this weight, then the volume changes just in the deterministic way by each of the n phi. And then we have two other terms. They are really irrelevant. So this is purely random and this is purely local. There is no combination of local and of space and randomness. So it's essentially saying that this random measure is conformally invariant. Okay, again, that's all what I want to say to this Liouville measure. And now we come to the last object, the so-called Polyakov-Liouville measure. This is an even more sophisticated and fascinating object. Again, very recent story in dimension two. And in some sense, what people claim, and actually I would agree with them, is that with this construction, these people, or even larger group, around Rhodes Vargas, David Garbar, Kubiainen, established the first rigorous, mathematically rigorous approach to conformal field theory. So with real existence proofs of the objects which are used. And the objects which are used, they have to do with a measure which is informally given again as an integral over all fields, weighted with an action functional. And now the action functional should be the so-called Polyakov-Liouville action proposed by Polyakov. So it's a, here we have a curvature tensor of a two-dimensional space. So in two-dimensional, all curvature concepts are the same, Gauss curvature, whatever you want. Here we have a kind of quantum fluctuations, the energy of this field. And this is the matter field, which is involved. So it's the each of, so you integrate each of this against the volume measure. So then this gives the energy. And here you have, then the volume of a weighted manifold. Yeah, you change the volume or the metric tensor with the h, and if you integrate this with respect to the measure, this gives the volume of this perturbed manifold. M theta are constants, and yeah, they, of course, they have good arguments, and they know much more about field theory than I do. I already mentioned that this coupling of gravitational field and matter field. What is important for us, if you look on this action functional, and if you look on the minimizers, the minimizers will be solutions of a Liouville equation, which at the end of the day means this minimizes H will lead to a metric which has constant curvature. Now you can start with a surface which has non-constant curvature. You look on this action function and one property of this action function. This is not the only one of the defining property, but one important property is that the minimum of this function is concentrated or is attained for weights which make the given metric to a metric of constant curvature. And as a consequence, Lacan wrote and Vargas could prove that the measure rigorously defined, as we do in the sequel, will concentrate in the semi-classical limit on surface of constant curvature. For positive gamma, these will be distributions, which will be ugly metric measure spaces, but they will concentrate on let's say, round spheres or hyperbolic surfaces if gamma goes to zero. Okay, what do we do in higher dimensions? This is now the last message which I will present today. We generalize the Polyakov-Liouville action and do as the analogy suggests, so we replace the energy by the higher order energy. So this is the square root of our Kuiper harmonic operator. This integrated against the volume measure is then this conformal invariant energy. Here a curvature pops up. I will say some word. Here is a kind of trivial term. Actually, I should have erased that, but in our approach, this pops up for technical reasons, which is just a constant normalized by the volume times the field. Of course, also this presentation is important because if a G changes, the volume changes, but not the constant. And here we have this e to the gamma h, and it's again clear that our h typically is not a function, but a distribution, so this will produce some problem. But let's first discuss a little bit what is the Q. Q is a scalar-valued curvature in higher dimensions, in all dimensions. It's called Branson's curvature. And in dimension four, okay, in dimension two, Branson curvature is just Gauss curvature. In dimension four, this is the Laplacian of a scalar curvature plus constant times Ricci curvature square plus a constant times scalar curvature squared. So it's a scalar valued object. And it's, now if you think that curvature anyway is twice differentiation, we have a fourth differentiation here. And yeah, crucial important property is if Q curvature is conformally invariant. And sorry, the total Q curvature. You have the integral of a Q curvature is conformally invariant. And Q curvature also has an important property that you can calculate the Q curvature in a transformed space from the Q curvature of the original space just by adding the operator of the wave function. So this should remind you of the formula for the curvature on a weighted surface, which is the curvature of the original surface plus the Laplacian of the exponential wave function. Now, if you have a surface, if you weight it by e to the phi, then the new curvature is the old curvature plus Laplacian of phi or minus whatever times this vector here. And here the new Q curvature is the old Q curvature plus the polyharmonic operator of this weight function, which pops up here. And here you have this factor. Actually, you easily see that this gives the invariance of a total Q curvature, because if you integrate that, this cancels out. This gives the same, the integral of this is zero, because you have integration by parts and you put the P on a constant, which gives us zero. Okay, what else is interesting? If you look on the minimizers of this action function, you have Euler-Lagrange equation, which looks as follows. So you have an operator, you have a curvature, you have this constant, and you have this exponential function. If you choose the constants in an appropriate manner, and if you choose this m in particular as a constant times appropriate constants, times this guy, you end up, you can rewrite this in this form. And if you remember what this means the minimizers of this Polyakov-Liouville action concentrate on weights, which lead to a metric of constant transient curvature. So this will be also important for our interpretation of what we will do. And now what, how do we proceed? So these are our informal answers. So we have this action functional. So this is our action. We want to put this into the exponential and integrate it with respect to the uniform distribution of fields, which of course doesn't exist. How to make this rigorous? We combine this guy and this guy. And this is the measure which we already have defined before. Yeah, because this is the Gaussian measure with this polyharmonic energy as the rate function. So this and that gives the measure. And what remains is this guy. Okay, H fan is a distribution, so we should write this a little bit more careful. We pair the distribution with a curvature function. Here, this is just the distribution paired with one, so the mean value of a distribution. And here, this exponential of gamma h, this is now this Liouville quantum gravity measure, which I have defined right before. So this is just, well, remember, we subtract here a little bit to normalize it. We make a renormalization procedure, approximation, and so on. And at the end, we have a well-defined Liouville quantum gravity measure. And the total mass of our manifold under this Liouville quantum gravity measure is popping up here. M is just a constant. And concerning this measure, I also have to say some extra word. Namely, it's this measure which we have constructed before, which lives on the grounded fields. But now we go to the ungrounded. This is, okay, technically a little bit unpleasant. So you have a grounded functional distribution plus a T. T stands, roughly speaking, for the mean value, which can now be arbitrary. T is distributed according to Lebesgue measure. So the mean value of your function can be wherever they want. There is no restriction on this. This has mean value zero, so an arbitrary function can be written this way. Grounded plus mean value. And mean value are distributed according to the Lebesgue measure, and this H is distributed according to this Gaussian measure. And indeed, this new hat, which we use here, is not a probability measure. This is really an infinite measure. But this is the way one should proceed. And if you think of this informal construction, the constants here, they are not influenced by this energy. So the constants are really according to Lebesgue. This is really saying, you know, the constants, they are not scaled down. But this is what physicists also do. So this is our definition. What can we say? We have two important results, which mimic exactly what people also could achieve in dimension two. If our curvature essentially is negative, so if there are a lot of constants, this is our Q curvature. If this is negative, then this whole construction is a finite measure. So this was an infinite measure. This is, it's by absolute not clear why this should be true, because H fluctuates to positive and negative. Q is negative now, let's say. And this constant should be positive to make no confusion, or just feeder star disappear, whatever. We have a result which gives the finiteness, and we have another result for appropriate choice of constants, that this measure is conformally quasi invariant modulo shift. This is rather technical. We consider this measure with a weighted tensor. We have a prefactor like in Gersdorff. This is called conformal anomaly by physicists. And this guy is then shifted, by an operator given explicitly. This is not that relevant, but people are really interested in this conformal anomaly. This can be written down explicitly because this gives the quantity people are interested in. So if you just think of defining the Wiener measure in such a way with a Dirichlet energy, then this is what I always like very much. If you believe that Wiener measure is defined in such a way with Dirichlet energy here, then it's just a two-line argument to deduce Gersdorff. Yeah, because Gersdorff is then just the formula for the energy of a sum. The energy of a sum is the energy of the first factor, which should appear again here. And the two other factors are the terms which pop up in Gersdorff formula. And the point is, people already knew these Gersdorff terms. Yeah? If you make this heuristic formula approach to Wiener measure, you could derive Gersdorff, and you would know what is the prefactor in front of a Wiener measure. And the prefactor is meaningful, even if you do not know what is Wiener measure. And this is how physicists did for the last 20 years. They knew this factor, but they did not have a rigorous construction of a measure. But now with this construction in dimension two, which was done within the last 5 years, this is a rigorous construction. And okay, we had been quite happy that we could mimic now these constructions also on more general manifolds of even dimension. And this is what I want to stop here. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much.